Hi, I'm Jeff Davis. The car is gassed up, so let's head out for another trip on the wine road. Today we're heading to Vina, California, north of Chico, which is about 2.5 hours north of Napa Valley. There's not much there, but an historic winery, the former Great Vina Ranch. It is said that in the late 1800s, it was the world's largest wine producer. But for reasons, as you'll hear, they got out of the business prior to Prohibition. Then 40 years later, Trappist Cistercian monks purchased the property and called it the Abbey of New Clairvaux. In the 1970s, with the help of Phil Sunseri of Napa Valley's oldest family-run winery, they started making wine again at the facility. I'll talk with Brother Luis, their vineyard manager, in just a few minutes, but I'll start with their current winemaker, Amy Sunseri, who was also the fifth-generation winemaker of Nicolini Winery. I said to Amy, as large as this winery was in the late 1800s, I'm surprised its legacy isn't well known.
Yes, I keep calling it the lost viticultural area. So as soon as Stanford, Stanford University was owning it close to before Prohibition. And so when Prohibition hit, that really changed everything. And Stanford University, because of bad press, decided that they really can't be in the alcohol industry anymore for their image sake. And so they ended up pulling out nearly 4,000 acres of vines within one winter. So really made a statement. Wow. I mean, they didn't slowly exit. They made a very conscious decision to exit and started breaking up all of their land and selling it off in parcels because it was very big. It was about just under 60,000 acres. And so once Prohibition hit and all the vines in this little town called Vina, named, you know, in honor of all the grape growing history pre-Prohibition, that was really the biggest source of grape growing in this area. And when that packed up and moved, it never came really back in. There was a couple flurries in the 70s of grape growing in Vina again, but they were very short-lived. There was no winery here to accept the fruit, so a lot of it went down to the San Joaquin Valley to get processed. But because it was such a long truck drive and you could get fruit down there for maybe even better pricing, it really just wasn't economical. And so those 70s, those 1970s vineyards that were revitalized, they really only lasted about 30 years, and they too disappeared. It wasn't until 2000 when vineyards were planted here and a winery was put here that we are hoping will survive. Especially for the monks' business and continue in that generation because they're the owners of the heart of the winery and part of the vineyards that are here in Vina today.
Well, those vines were planted as long ago as 1846. I read, thanks to the pioneer Peter Lassen, he knew that the volcanic soil would be appropriate for vineyards. And then, like you say, it grew to 4,000 acres by 1881. Amazingly, 2 million gallons was being produced at that time and being shipped outside of the country.
Yeah, they were their biggest markets for Henry Gerke, who is the second vintner here. So Lassen started, planted vines 1846, like you said. And then it changed ownership to Henry Gerke. Henry Gerke was the first to make Vina Wines International, and his largest markets were New York and over in Europe. And they didn't have the Panama Canal yet, so all of those wines had to travel from the West Coast around South America along the Cape to get to New York or to get to Europe. And because of his success in selling out in great wines, that's what inspired Stanford to come looking up here for a winery and a vineyard to also to purchase and then expand, of course.
He was the governor at that time, I guess, or just maybe just prior to being a governor.
He purchased this a little later in life. So he was a former governor for sure. He was also a senator.
And railroad magnate.
Yep.
So he had some money and some power.
Yes, he was very well known in the area. He always thought big. So, you know, he was a big thinker, big idea. And his mission was to create the largest winery in the world. There's no doubt about that, because as soon as he bought this property, I mean, he was actually competing with a vineyard in Southern California that held the title largest vineyard in the world. And so he knew who his competition was. It was called Sunnyside or Sunny View Vineyards, and it was back in the 1870s when it held that title. And so that was his competition, and by 1890 he surpassed their region or their vineyard size.
And at that time was called the Great Vina Ranch.
Yes. That's, I don't know if Stanford came up with that or not, but his motto was, "It's pure, that's for sure." And I thought that was, you know, back then there was, you know, still people who, even during Stanford's time, because he passed before Prohibition, he died in, I think it was 1895 or 96. And so he died, and so this property was passed over to Stanford University. But during his years of being here, he always said, if I thought alcohol in any way hurt the human population, I would not be making it. So he was adamant that in a culture of, you know, moderate drinking was actually a healthy lifestyle, and promoted family and gathering and socialism that he thought was beneficial.
And they're finding that out even today, promoting
they
that
are.
Fact.
He was right.
And about that same time is when your family got started over in the Napa area, about 1890, huh?
Yes, and my family probably had that same mindset. Anton Nicolini started Nicolini Winery, and he was a miner, and he recognized that up in the hills there wasn't a lot of people, but there were miners, and they were all families, and they were all just starting out, and he decided that, you know, I need to make a local drink so that we can all share together, because they are all immigrants and this was part of their lifestyle. So he ended up planting a vineyard to make enough wine to satisfy all the miners up in that area. He even built a bread oven that was big enough to bake bread on a daily basis and sell it to the miners. So he definitely was... he was always had his head on a swivel, you know, looking for the opportunity and the needs. And he was also a big thinker, and even in the small hills, but he started something, a seed that grew into something that is now five generations deep in family winemaking and grape growing.
As you'll hear, Amy's father, Phil, is also a big thinker, an idea man, which is how he established a relationship with the Abbey at New Clairvaux. As the Vina Ranch was thriving in the late 1800s, his family, the Nicolinis, got established in the Napa area in the 1890s. Understanding what helps vineyards thrive, the soil in Vina caught his eye.
He first met the brothers because his main job's a contractor. And he met the brothers in the 70s and helped them with building a couple different buildings here on the monastery. And he learned about the history of Vina when he met the monks, because the monks have the heart of Leland Stanford's old winery. So he saw these, you know, 2-acre solid brick buildings, and he's an architecture construction guy, and thinking to himself, that is pretty amazing that you guys have this gem. And he started doing research and fell in love with the area, always wanted a ranch. And when I was in high school, maybe my last year in high school, he bought 100 head of cattle, called up my mom and said, we need to buy a ranch because we need a place to put our cattle that we just bought.
That was a sneaky way to get the ranch.
Sneaky way, yes. He's known for that. And so they ended up looking for ranches, and they found one in Vina, and brought the cows home, and that kind of started him running cattle and being a farmer, taking care of his land. And he found a very a special parcel of pasture grass that was very rocky and sandy, and it didn't grow very good. It was only the summer or the winter rains could actually grow something out of there, and it wasn't very thick. And so he worked with this ground, was going to replant it, and as soon as he dug it up, dissed it, and kind of reevaluated what was under there, he realized this is vineyard ground. And that was actually the start. That vineyard eventually got renamed, or not renamed, but got named Poor Souls, because it was such a difficult vineyard to get started. And when we started, both the monks and my dad shared consultants, and I kind of was just a volunteer, just digging trenches and putting in irrigation at that point. And anyways, they wanted to put in an experimental vineyard because they knew all the problems that happened in the past. Nobody obviously was still here growing grapes and making wine. And so anyways, it was a bit of an adventure to see if it could even grow into anything.
But it did, obviously. It's been a success. And it's funny, when you mentioned Poor Souls, I thought for sure that was a name given by the monks.
Well, it was started by the monks. That is very true. They had a vineyard. They've got a couple different. When the monks first came here, they blessed and named all of their ag fields. So they have an All Saints vineyard. They have Trinity Block. They have St. James. And after we had planted it, because we all knew it was quite a difficult vineyard to get planted, one of the monks suggested we should call it Poor Souls because we were trying to figure out a name for it, and that definitely stuck.
Right. Well, who better to work with it than the monks, huh? Helping out the poor souls.
That's very true.
And this makes an appropriate place to bring in Brother Luis, who is the vineyard manager of New Clairvaux Vineyard. Amy wasn't sure if he would be wearing his habit, because if he was in the vineyard that day, he'd be wearing work clothes. And yes, they call a monk's tunic a habit, like they do for nuns. As it turned out, Brother Luis did wear his habit, and if you don't see the photo of Amy and Brother Luis on this podcast, you can find it on my website, onthewineroad.com. Quickly, getting back to the theme of this interview, history. Cistercian monks built and worked the iconic Clos du Vougeot in Burgundy, where winemaking took root in that region in the 12th century. And now, here they are doing similar work in Northern California in the 21st century. I just think it's fantastic that something that started so long ago continues to this day. I started by asking Brother Luis what his typical day looks like at the Abbey of New Clairvaux.
Well, we get rolling pretty early in the morning. Our first bell tolls at 3:15 a.m., and we're at church at 3:30 singing our praises, our first round of praises to our God, happily, if half asleep. But that's how the day begins, and we have several sessions of psalmody throughout the day, and interspersed between our primary work, which is praise to God, we have our manual labor, and my manual labor mostly consists of work in the vineyard.
How many monks work with the winery?
Well, we have various monks working at different levels and different departments within the winery enterprise. We have one vineyard manager, me, and a few assistants in the vineyard, two or three. We also have an enologist, Brother Francis. He works with Amy, testing all the fancy, using fancy equipment to test levels of I don't know what. And various monks working during the harvest season, actually all of the monks, able-bodied, come out during harvest and do a lot of hard work for about 2 weeks, bringing in all the fruit.
Were you trained in viticulture?
Not officially. I don't have a certificate or a diploma to my name, but I have a lot of experience handed down from people who have lots of experience, like Amy and my predecessor, Brother Raphael, who was in the vineyard 10 years before I took over.
Brother Luis, the Cistercians are a reform of the Benedictine monks, and they had a vow of poverty and labor. So might that explain why your prices of your wine is surprisingly low?
Perhaps. Also, the rule of St. Benedict, which we follow after 1,500 years, also stipulates that we are not to price our products more expensively than others around. But I'm not sure. Today we're pretty practical, and we need to pay the bills somehow, so we're pretty competitive, I suppose.
You guys have a modern growing philosophy of sustainability, but that farming practice with the Cistercian monks goes back centuries. Explain how you uphold that belief here.
Well, from the very beginning, we've been closely tied to the land. Benedict had his monks earn their living by the work of their own hands, the sweat of their brow. So we've always had a great reverence for the land, because it's from the land that we obtained our living. That reverence has been embedded into our ethos as monks, and even our constitutions today for the Cistercians have us observe a great deal of pride and great stewardship over the land that we occupy and use for God's greater glory.
And it makes sense, because you all just continue on, so you want it to be there for future generations.
Sure, the monastic enterprise is a long-sighted mission. We think in terms of centuries, not years, individual years. So what we do here is with an eye to continuing the praises of God for centuries to come, for many who will join us in the future.
And Amy told me you're now going to be working in organic farming.
Yes, this is our first year where we jump in entirely into the organic practice, and we've received some great consultation, and so far we've had some very good results, and we're very optimistic about the future of organic farming here at New Clairvaux.
This will be the first harvest?
This will be the first organic harvest, so praise God.
Good luck with that. And I think I saw you have solar panels, and there's a lot more to your sustainability than just your farming practices.
Absolutely. We're availing ourselves to all the means that are available in our society today, and we're continuing to look at different means of improving the way we use our resources, our God-given resources, so that we might not waste, so that we might share with all the best that we have.
I saw that your wine has done well in award competitions, partly, of course, thanks to Amy's craft and your viticulture. Does that mean much to you when you win awards, or is it just kind of a, oh, that's nice?
Well, certainly. It's all for the greater glory of God. And if people have recognized the fine quality of our work, we praise God. And that's what we're here for.
Well, Brother Luis, I certainly appreciate your time today.
Well, it's my pleasure to share about our passion here at New Clairvaux. Thank you.
I like how forthcoming he is, and certainly very peaceful. One thing I hadn't asked Amy yet was how she became the winemaker at New Clairvaux.
My inspiration was when I started working with the brothers and my dad. I had a great time working with my dad and really wanted to extend that relationship. I got volunteered. My parents paid my way through college, and so every summer when I didn't have too much college work, if I didn't need to take a summer class, then I went and worked on my dad's cattle ranch. And in 2000, they were putting in the vineyards, one on my dad's property and one on the monk's property. And I got volunteered to help get those established. So I got to work with monks, I got to work with my dad, had the summer of my life, realized that I wanted to be out working in vineyards for the rest of my life because it just resonated with me. And at the very end of that summer, after thinking about it and just thinking what a great opportunity that I was seeing developing, I asked my dad and both my parents if they would continue supporting me through college if I could somehow get into Davis and get my degree in viticulture and enology. And they said yes, and it took me some work, but I did get into Davis the following fall. I had to finish my current program in Santa Barbara is where I was going at the time. And they did let me do a second bachelor's degree. And by 2003, I'd finished Davis's program. But I kept coming back on weekends because Davis and Vina are about an hour and a half away from each other. So every weekend I was working in the vineyards and just trying to learn more and apply what I was learning.
She said the first batch of wine they made as a test turned out to be very good, inspiring them to continue with the idea of making wine with the brothers. It has worked out well for Amy and the Abbey. Aside from New Clairvaux, Amy makes the wine for her family's Nicolini brand. She also has a brand called Amy. Her dad chose that name, much to her chagrin. Needless to say, she keeps busy and manages to bottle quite a list of varietals.
Well, I think we grow, like I said, we started with an experiment. We weren't sure with new technology, new varieties, new knowledge of clones and different things, what would really work well. What was most surprising is the whites ended up being excellent. We, you know, being here in a very warm viticulture area, we, for some reason, like I think many people, just intuitively thought that this would be red wine country. And even though we knew the history, Gerke was very famous for his whites as well, we just thought that was a fluke. But after many years of growing, we realize our whites actually are stellar. They grow so well, especially in the St. James and the Trinity block where the monks have that deep vinal loam. So we plant almost all of our whites in that ground. And we do Albarino, Viognier, Trebbiano. We're just now experimenting with some French Colombard, Rosan, Marsan. We just planted two new Greek varieties that were the first in the U.S. to grow, Assyrtiko and Muscofilaro, and which I think is very, just this whole experimental concept is very fitting for the brothers, especially because they are known in history to introduce varieties into new areas, and they constantly put different varieties intentionally. They would bring it to some of their communities in a completely different country because their network was so big. They would, you know, have some Albarino that they were growing on in Germany, and they said this would be really great for our brothers up in the mountains in Galicia, Spain. So they would, you know, bring cuttings over there, and then lo and behold, Albarino becomes a Spanish grape, and its name literally translates to the white of the Rhine because it came from the monks in Mosel, Germany. And so anyways, just very characteristic for them to try different things in different regions. And so now they're trying these Greek grapes. And so far, I think we've gotten very fortunate. They have made some really great wine. So we're expanding those blocks, and we'll see if that's a lasting fit for the Vina area.
And with them being here, no telling how long this property is going to be existing into the future.
Yeah, for, you know, with when you talk with the abbot, Father Paul Mark, he's very, like Brother Luis had mentioned, they think in terms of centuries. I think it's just such a beautiful thing to not look at your life, but as this, you know, spectrum, that it's just this little sliver in the bigger picture of what you're trying to do.
You must be very proud that your name will always be associated with this place.
I think it puts a little pressure, maybe, because
yeah,
I really
have to succeed.
Yeah, I want to do it justice for sure. I want to start something that actually will be something that will be worth continuing.
Well, I've always enjoyed your wine, and Nicolini, it's fantastic, and you're winning awards, so it looks like you're on the right path, and
yeah.
I'm looking forward to trying your new Clairvaux wines here and the Amy label.
Yes, good, thank you. Actually, have you heard of the International Women Wine Competition? So I just got Woman Winemaker of the Year.
Oh,
I tied with somebody, but it's still a great honor.
Yeah, I was just at an event not too long ago with kind of promoting that event.
Oh, okay, wonderful. So yeah, they just came out with results, and Nicolini's, I think between Nicolini, Amy Brand, and New Clairvaux, it was a cluster of like 20 awards. And what's amazing is I'm pretty sure close to almost every wine we entered won something. So that's a great, just to know that all of our wines are that solid to stand out, to deserve some type of merit, is really a great feeling.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm honored to be in your presence.
Amy tied for first place with Melanie Natoli of Canna Vineyards and Winery in Middleburg, Virginia. What a coup for Melanie. And if all goes according to plan, you'll be hearing her on this podcast in the coming weeks. As I mentioned, Vina sits pretty much alone in the flatlands of Northern California, but if you or your spouse enjoy beer, the Sierra Nevada Brewery is just 25 miles south, and they hold several tours each day. If you like wine and or beer, a visit to New Clairvaux Vineyard and Sierra Nevada would make for a fun day or a weekend. Furthermore, the brothers of New Clairvaux Vineyard have brewed several ales in association with Sierra Nevada.
That shouldn't come as a surprise. They've been crafting ales for centuries. Find all the details of the Abbey and Vineyard at newclairvauxvineyard.com. Thanks for joining me for this excursion on the wine road.